Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
Ernie Hudson.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Give online therapy a try at betterhelp.com/dadville and get on your way to being your best self.
John, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
How is your social battery right now?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. I've kind of been feeling drained lately, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
I wonder if I don't set enough boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like sometimes I spread myself a little too thin.
Hey, John, listen, know? I know what you mean, John. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin with all the social gatherings picking up after one.
It's tough to know what the right amount of socializing is for me, you know, and how to best recharge.
Yeah, I know. You know, John, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
I agree completely. I think therapy is a great way to learn positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. I think it could empower me to be the best version of myself.
John, it isn't just for those who have experienced trauma. It can benefit anyone.
That's right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/dadville today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/dadville.
I do feel like I want to talk quickly, as John said. We assumed you were late because you were working out.
No.
You were just throwing weights around, and you thought, these guys can wait. I got to get through this 500-pound bench press.
I wish I was that disciplined. You know, I wish I could say that was it. But this is all kind of interesting to me because, you know, I've never really been, I don't want to say been a fan. I always know it was important, but I've never really gotten into working out. Until maybe my early 70s. As I call him Mr. Jiggles, came to visit. And Mr. Jiggles is this little guy that's just around the navel and a little below that suddenly, and he wouldn't go away, you know?
Mr. Jiggles visits people typically much earlier in their lifetime. So if he didn't get you until your 70s.
People said when I turned 50, that would be a big change. There was no change. Mm-hmm. But it just suddenly it was kind of there, and I felt like it was talking to me, especially after the sun goes down. It's like, you know, eat. I got to eat, you know, and I was feeding it. So, So about a year ago, I started getting to the gym, and I think little by little, you know, just changing lifestyle a little bit, I realized that I had to begin to do something. But I've always... basically use fasting to kind of keep things from getting out of whack, you know.
So this is God-given, what we're looking
pretty
at.
Pretty much God-given. And then if I'm, you know, I've done films where I've played boxers or I got to do some, you know, then I'll work out hard to sort of get into that condition. But generally speaking, yeah, no, I've never really, you know, I've said it on a number of places, but when I was in high school, I took this awful job working in a foundry, and my job was shoveling dirt. And these cups were on a conveyor belt, so you could never fill them up because they just kept rolling, and you just kept shoveling. It was a room filled with dirt. I don't even know how big the room was because it was just piles of black dirt that would go up and go on a conveyor belt to the molders who use it to make molds. So I went to work from 2 to 12 at night. I'd go to school in the morning, get off at noon, run, get with my brother, go to work. From 2 to 12, I basically shoveled dirt.
There we go.
And
okay.
I think it builds up my upper body and my arms.
Yeah, no kidding.
It sort of lasted, for the rest of my life, I guess.
If I could just tell my younger self, go shovel dirt for
kids,
just
if you're
hours
listening,
and hours.
Grab a shovel.
Dirt. Okay, so we got Ernie. We have to introduce you because this is people already hear your dulcet tones and immediately are taken to very specific places and times. But we do here on Dadville, we do what's called the brag sheet, where we just kind of tell people all the myriad of things you've done. And once again, man, just there's a lot of things you've done. So buckle up because this is going to be a little bit like This Is Your Life. Right. So just enjoy it as it scrolls across and you get to enjoy all of your accomplishments. All right. So the big thing is the new movie is out, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which is that's big. Originally from Michigan.
Yeah.
Attended Wayne State University and Yale School of Drama, which we've never had someone that has attended Yale School of Drama on here. Appeared in over 250 movies and shows. That's just, listen to some of these, okay? We obviously know Ghostbusters, we've just said. The Crow with Brandon Lee, Miss Congeniality 1 and 2, which are my favorite, my wife and some of our favorite movies. And The Rock's a Cradle, Congo, recent films, Champions, Retirement Plan with Nicolas Cage, Prisoner's Daughter with Brian Cox, Television, this is insane, Secret Life of the American Teenager, Law and Order, LA's Finest, Twin Peaks, Scandal, Blue Bloods, Grey's Anatomy, Ballers, and two of my favorites, Dukes of Hazzard and A-Team. Huge shout out there. That made me so happy seeing those. Got a little emotional. This is a fun fact. This is really cool. Has been a reserve deputy sheriff in San Bernardino County in California Sheriff's Office, which I don't know how that works. I feel like there may be some money being exchanged that we don't know about. Worked with his son, Ernie Hudson Jr. in the HBO series Odds, which we love. Of course, this is Dadville. And then won the Satellite Award for Best Actor in a Series for his performance in HBO's acclaimed prison series Oz. Currently stars in the reboot of Quantum Leap. And right now is also starring not just in Ghostbusters, but as we said, as a meme that is traveling the internet that I sent John this morning that I just want to read really quickly because this is once again about your biceps. Actor Ernie Hudson is going viral for being phenomenal shape at 78. And that's just, that's your life, Ernie, just being in shape, crediting your dirt scooping days. So when you hear this, we always love asking this. So when you hear that, all these, and I mean, we left out copious amounts of things. How do you feel hearing that? Like when you think of all the things you've worked on and done, like, how do you feel hearing that?
Well, it's, first off, I say it's nice that someone noticed. It went viral, I think, with a press junket I did in London, and I wore a T-shirt, which I tend to wear just a lot because I'm bad at picking out clothes. But so after 78 years, nothing's changed physically, but suddenly someone noticed. But I think it's... we do the work. I wanted to be a working actor. I started in 66, 67. Mm-hmm. And I've been very blessed to, from the day I decided to be an actor, to be able to make a living at it. I've never had to work outside of the industry. I've never had to go have friends talk about waiting tables or whatever. But I was a single dad. So now for people to tie it kind of all together, the Ghostbusters, the Hand of Rocks or Cradle or the Congo or, the Crow, or it's nice to, it's almost like finally being seen maybe in a weird way. It's like,
I would think it, I feel like you sort of define the working actor. I think that's what's, as I was looking at all the movies you've done, I'm like, I can't think of someone that would define that more than you. I mean, you've just worked so much across so many things.
Well, I think after all the years, you it would be great to have in the background a bunch of Academy Awards. And, yeah. And you go, well, geez, I hope I'm good at this because, they keep hiring me. I keep getting paid. But but the attention somehow... isn't always there,
right.
You kind of go, geez, I wonder, I was on Broadway doing a show and several people were nominated and while the reviews were very flattering, it was like, yeah, but, sometimes.
Yeah.
I think it's just making peace with, how do I, I want to be a working actor. That was a prayer, but you also want to, there are things you want to accomplish.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's never been at the height of my, wish list. And maybe it should have, because I have friends. I remember, there was an actor named Howard Rollins. I knew Denzel when he you know, a lot of guys when they first start out. And I think they were more driven, and I was more focused on my kids and family.
Yeah.
And maybe if I had made that, you know, more selective, only take certain roles. But it's, you know, it's about the work for me, and it's.
So what did that look? I mean, that's a fascinating point. Now, first of all, I love hearing that. I mean, that's really encouraging, I think, to any dad listening to know that that was something you were cognizant of. But like, what did that look like making decisions then when the boys were little? Like, how would you determine what to take?
Well, first off, there were a lot of things I felt I couldn't do because I did have kids and they were watching. You know, you just want to be aware that, not that I felt, people said, well, you have a responsibility to, but I just felt I had a responsibility to my sons. It was very hard for me to, when my marriage ended, I got married really young, 18, she was 16.
Really young.
Which is, now I can't even imagine that, but I did it. And we had kids right away. And I couldn't say to my sons that this is America, you know, all that stuff. We believe we're the, and I can't dream and realize my dream that somehow I have to sacrifice just for us to live. And so it was important for me to be an example of, you can have a dream and you can, you know, work at it and it's possible. I wanted to be an example of what was possible for them. And I always felt because, you know, relatives would say, you know, you got kids, you need to get a job. But I always felt that was, in a way, sort of acknowledging the impossibility. And I always wanted to say, no, we can do this. I know there's a job out there. You know, I've always believed in God, or for some people who have issues with that word, the universe, and just having faith. But they, you know, there are times you'd go into an audition and they would say, thank you, but you know you hadn't registered, and you'd go, no, we're going to do this again. It was something, I have children, we have to eat, we got to do this because I know I'm right for this part.
Yeah.
So without my kids, I don't know if I would have. There were also things that friends, especially in the early days, it was, you know, it was time to party. That was during a lot of things going on in the 60s and 70s and 80s. Mm. But I was always aware that, you know, I can't hang out 2 or 3 days. I got kids at home. How I conduct myself is hard for me to say to them, don't do this. And I'm sort of doing that.
Yeah.
So I think they've always sort of kept me focused on what I needed to do. And I didn't have a dad. You know, I never knew my dad. And it was really important for me that I not you know, shirk my responsibility. It was important for me that I be there for them in a way that I felt no one had been there for me. And I think not having a dad, I didn't quite learn about how relationships go. So it was always very difficult for me to get a mentor. You know, I was always sort of, I think, projecting strength that a lot of people didn't feel that I needed help or advice. And so, But my kids, I think having my sons kept me focused, and I will give credit to them because I was probably as much a kid in some ways, and there were times when the roles would kind of reverse. And the kids would go, I'd come home frustrated over not getting a part, and my sons would go, Dad, that's, take a deep breath, you know, sit down. Now, what's wrong? And I'm like, I didn't get the part. I've worked so hard. I knew I'm right. And they said, Dad, young buck, get him some water. And now, you know, and we talk about it. And and we got by as a son.
Johnny, what's up, man?
Hey.
You okay? Everything okay?
Sorry, I'm just laying down on the ground like this because I'm craving electrolytes, you know? I could barely even say the word electrolytes.
Yeah, you're
right,
so
there,
tired. I can tell.
What should I do? You
well,
have any advice?
It's time to get you electrolytes, Johnny.
Hey,
and you have come to the right place. It's called Element, but it's spelled in one of those cool ways. It makes us 40-somethings feel young and hip when we figure out how to say it correctly.
Oh, let me give it a chance. Elementant.
It's not French, right? Actually. It's the letters L-M-N-T, and it's pronounced Element.
Ooh, Element. I feel cooler already.
Oh, let me tell you
about
it.
I just got electrolytes by saying it.
You just got electrolyte like we were hoping for. Element replenishes my electrolytes with a tasty drink mix with everything you need and nothing you don't, John. That means lots of salt with no sugar.
Mm.
It contains a science-backed electrolyte ratio of sodium, potassium, and you're going to ask, I know,
I was going to ask about magnesium.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
With
okay.
None of the junk. No sugar, no coloring, no artificial ingredients, no gluten, and no fillers.
You know, electrolytes are what I crave,
no,
Dave.
I'm
starting to get up off the ground just because of this conversation. You don't have to be a brawny professional athlete like Dave and I to benefit from Element. Electrolytes facilitate hundreds of functions in the body, including the conduction of nerve impulses, hormonal regulation, nutrient absorption, and fluid balance.
My
just
favorite
to name a few.
Flavor. I'm excited. My favorite flavor of Element is watermelon salt. John, think you'll love mango chili.
Ooh. I don't know. It sounds like a spicy meatball, but I'm excited to try it.
Right now, Element is offering a free sample pack with any purchase. The Element sample pack includes one packet of every flavor.
This is the perfect offer for anyone interested in trying all the flavors or who wants to introduce a friend to Element, like Dave's going to introduce me, right? Because we're besties.
Could you please stand up off the ground?
No, I can't. I'm actually going to lay back down.
Oh.
Get yours at drinklmnt.com/dadville. This deal is only available through the Dadville link, and Element offers no questions asked refunds.
That's drinklmnt.com/dadville. Try it totally risk-free. If you don't like it, share it with a salty friend, and they will give you your money back. No questions asked. You have nothing to lose. John, I prepared just a little. I just want to say it while I'm thinking about it, okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
John, your hair is never just your hair. Okay?
Oh, where are you going with this?
Well, just stay with me. It's built into your identity, your confidence, your brain space.
Uh-huh.
It's been with you through thick and thin. It's also thick and thin. And the reason it may be thinning, see where I'm going here, that's not just hair either.
You know what? I couldn't agree more. Yeah. It could be something with your job or your stomach. Or even your antiperspirant.
Right.
That's right. So when it comes to supporting your hair, we don't just support your hair. We support the person it grows from.
Oh, that's
great. We take the whole body approach to supporting your lifestyle, not just your hairstyle.
Nutrafol knows it could be the daily stresses of parenting. Don't have those. My kids are amazing.
Nope.
Eating junk food. What is it? I don't even know what junk food is. Skipping meals. Haven't eaten in 6 days. Or experiencing sleepless nights. I'm asleep right now, John. There are so many reasons why your hair may be thinning, and Nutrafol has a plan to help.
Dave, if I could add to that, Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding.
Physician-formulated with drug-free ingredients, Nutrafol's hair growth supplements are clinically tested to multi-target key root causes of thinning, John.
That's right. And with Nutrafol, building a hair growth routine, it's simple.
Yeah.
Purchase online. No prescription or doctor's visit required. Free shipping and automated deliveries ensure you'll never miss a day. See results in 3 to 6 months.
Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code Dadville.
That's Nutrafol.com, spelled NutrafoL.com. Promo code Dadville.
That's Nutrafol.com, promo code Dadville. One of the sweetest things, it meant so much to me. I was on Ernie Hudson Jr.'s Instagram page, and he posts about you so much. It is the sweetest thing.
Oh, wow.
It moved me so much because it was, you know, obviously he's got his things going on, but then every about 5 or 6 slides or whatever, there'd be a picture of you, and it would just be the sweetest little comment of like, look at Pops out there still. In fact, the one that made me laugh the hardest, and John actually talked about this because you've been in so many films and TV shows, is one he posted. He was like, my wife alerted me to
my dad is in a movie that just came out. I didn't even know he shot. And I thought that was like the funniest thing, because I was like, that's how much you're working. But I just thought it was such an enduring thing, and speaks to y'all's relationship, that he would, you know, take the time to post those things and brag on you. You know?
That, yeah, I never really saw his page, because I don't really do a lot of online stuff. But that makes me very, very happy. You know, Ernest, my oldest son, he taught me how to play chess. You know, he would, when he was a little kid, he'd introduce me to books. Jonathan Livingston Seagull was one of the books.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how he found it. He must have read it in school or something. But Siddhartha was one of the books. That, but he, you know, he's always been, you know, when things are really confusing, Ernest is always that counsel that I you know, and it goes both ways. I mean, but I just, all of my sons, it's difficult for me being at this stage of parenthood, because, you know, they have children and there's a gap between me and their children. And I don't quite understand the role of grandparent. You know what I mean? I don't quite know how. You can't sort of interfere, but they live lives that I'm not familiar with. And I have a real difficult time with that. But my sons are all great people. And
do they live out there?
Two of my sons, one has kind of never left home. And one just came back. He's a watchmaker. They was up in Seattle, and he took a job here near LA. And so he just moved back home. But my older boys that I raised as a single dad, they Ernest is in New York, and Rockman is in Atlanta, and they have their families.
I want to go back to you grew up in Michigan, Benton Harbor, Michigan. Yeah, and I'm from Indiana, so I feel like maybe we lived parallel lives on some, you know, we had miserable winters for a while there. I can feel you on that. But what was the house like growing up that you grew up in? Like, were there siblings? Were you lived with your grandmother? Is that right?
Yeah, my grandmother. Yeah, my my mother had separated from the family. She had been married, had a baby, and then she and her husband broke up in, I think, Arkansas someplace. She went to East St. Louis and met my father. But she moved. She lived with a lady who got sick, and she stayed to take care of the lady. The lady had tuberculosis, which was the deadliest disease for the longest time. The lady died. By then, my mother had contracted the disease, but she had gotten pregnant with me. Came up to Michigan, where her family had migrated to, Benton Harbor, and gave birth to me and died. I was born in December. She died, I think, in March. And so my grandmother had me and my brother, who, you know, my brother and I have different dads. So, but he knew his dad. I never really, because nobody in my family knew my father. They weren't around when she got pregnant. So I didn't think I'd have a way of ever contacting that part of my family. My son, Ernest, who I was talking about earlier, he found that part of family on one of those ancestors. You know. But okay, I got lost from the question again. I'm sorry.
Well, I actually wanted to ask, as you mentioned that, like, growing up in Benton Harbor with your grandmother, did you? Yeah, you know, like, all of us, we just are born into whatever we're born into, and that's like the water you swim in. Were you aware that, like, you know, I've got friends who their dads are at home, like, I want to know who my dad is, when you were younger? Or were you just like, no, I didn't really think about it?
Oh, no. Up until I was probably about 8, that was the hardest thing. I kind of got, as much as a kid can understand, the fact that my mother had died. So, you know, you can go, she's not here. So she, but I don't get how come I don't have a father, and it bothered me a lot. Because my brother, like I said, he knew who his father was. The fact that nobody liked his father, that was an issue, but he at least knew who he was. And I would, you know, be at school, and you have to put your father's name down. And Hudson is actually my brother's father's name, because they didn't know my father. So, and you know, but I had a real hard time. when I was about 8 years old, my mother was very religious, but she was also very spiritual. And I kept the spiritual part. I'm not as religious. I'm not good about signing up for a lot of stuff. But in her trying to, give me some kind of understanding, I remember very clearly her sitting me down and saying, I know this bothers you. We may never know who your biological father is, but we know who your father is, and God is your father. Now it's very important for you to understand that this is not... I said, well, Mama, God is everybody's father. And she said, yeah, but everybody don't understand. Everybody don't know that. But I'm telling you, so you will always know who you belong to. And when you understand that it's personal, that you can ask, you can go in prayer and sincerity and expect an answer. Mm. So there's nothing you can't do, just because he will guide you. Something will guide you to where you need to be. But you, and there's some rules. You can't be out there trying to do harm to people and expect to get an answer. But, and when I, as a kid, I think if she had told me that at, say, 16, it would have been like, just talk. But as a little kid, I tried to go, well, if God is my father and God created everything, then, nobody's better than me because, I'm God's child and nobody's less than me. But she told me once, she said, you look around, you see everything. We'd walk to church and we'd see, just life, birds, animals, just on the way, talking about bees. And she would say, all of this in the universe, but God created you, and the universe would not be the same without you.
Oh, I love that.
That's so beautiful.
And I just, as a kid, I kind of took all that in because I needed that. And after that, I really didn't. And I also, I should mention, I had four amazing uncles who kind of stepped in and were examples of everything you can imagine. One was really smart and an idiot at the same time. One was really physical, but he'd cry at a moment's notice, any sad story, and he'd break out in tears. One was kind of a gangster, and he thought, he walked around with a gun, and he, did. And one was the hardest working man I ever met. I mean, he would, my brother and I would go, and the place where he worked at, which is a foundry, he'd make molds. But there was a window, they opened the window for air to get into the foundry. And he would be there making these molds, and he'd work so hard, the other workers would stand back and watch him just... He was just incredible. And so you learn a little bit here. The pastor in my church, there are men in your life who step in. And as a little kid, I think I was always looking. I would kind of attach myself to some, some guy who was kind of nice. And then eventually they say, get away from me. I'm not your father, And then my feelings would be hurt. And then I'd kind of, So being a dad was the most important thing for me, more than anything. I wanted to be a father, which is probably why I started so early in life.
Yeah.
Wow.
So when did the, I know you went to Wayne State, and then you went to University of Minnesota, and then you went to, Yale. I mean, when did the acting come in? When did the acting bug come in?
Well, my grandmother, who I've been talking so much about, but she was born in 1895.
Wow.
She never went to school, period.
Yeah.
She took a class in her 50s to learn how to write her name. That wasn't that uncommon for a lot of African Americans in this country. Yeah. Sadly, that's our history.
Mm-hmm.
But her dream for me, the thing she always stressed is, you got to finish high school. That is, because nobody in my family really had finished high school. Because I was working, picking fruit on farms when I was, the earliest job I had, I was probably about three, earliest memory I have of working, was picking fruit at strawberries. And I remember
that
working.
That was corn detasseling for us down in Indiana.
Yeah. And actually, we would kind of go to close to that borderline between, there were a lot of farmland along there and... Mm-hmm. I remember that memory because I worked so hard to fill this little quart basket up with strawberries, and I got it field, and I was taking it to my grandmother, and I tripped and spilled it all on the ground. And I remember crying, and I had my mother's sister was there and laughed at me and hurt my feelings. So when I got out of high school, I really hadn't prepared, because all I did was, you know, did what she asked me to do, finish high school, but I didn't really apply myself. So I ended up with, I think it was 1.7 GPA, which didn't prepare me for anything, but it's like, okay, it's like, but suddenly as I'm about to graduate, I realized that this is my life. Hmm. And if I don't do something, this is it. Yeah. So the answer was to go to the military. So before I graduated in June, but in April, before I graduated, we hitchhiked, me and two other friends. We hitchhiked from Michigan to Chicago. We didn't have any money to catch a bus to join the Marine Corps. And I signed up.
Jeez.
And they waited for me to my graduation. As soon as I graduated, I was shipped off to the Marines. But that was my answer. But the problem was, after getting to the Marines, somebody mentioned that there was a war going on. In 64, nobody talked about a war. I didn't know there was a war. So now I'm in the Marines, and there's a war. But I had, as a kid, I had asthma pretty bad. And I'm allergic to certain things. I'm allergic to shellfish. Mm-hmm. They served shrimp, and I tried to explain to the drill instructor that I couldn't eat it, and he insisted that I eat it, and I ate it, had an awful asthma attack, and that started everything going. And after 10 weeks in the Marines, I was discharged, and I found myself home in Benton Harbor with no prospects. And that's when I was dating this girl who was having issues at home. And so, I got a job working in this factory. It was so segregated in places. There were jobs that blacks couldn't even forget about even applying. I was the first African-American hired by this company. They made farm equipment, and they were founded in 70. It was like, you know, but I was the first African-American they hired. They actually made a little blurb in the paper, which made my mother proud that I was in the paper. Mm-hmm. Like, when I say my mother, I'm talking about my grandmother. That was kind of it. I got married, but what I didn't realize, the girl I was marrying was really brilliant. And she read a lot, which I didn't. And she kind of turned me on to books, and we started talking about what if. And we all the colleges I applied at turned me down. I couldn't even get in a junior college. That's how bad it was. Mm-hmm. But we ended up going to Detroit, and I got in Wayne State. This is getting to answer the question. I got in Wayne State because, you know, I always pray. And sometimes in the weirdest time, little answers will come. And something said, go to see the guidance counselor, make an appointment. I went there, and I just basically pleaded my case. The guy said, well, you know, if you go to a junior college, which is Highland Park College, and you do well, then come back and see me. So I went to Highland Park College, and... the best thing about going to school the first day was realizing that everybody who went to college wasn't that smart.
Yeah.
Like, really?
Yeah.
This is the college. I mean, like, I got this. So after that semester, I went back to Wayne. They let me in. This is getting to answer the question. So I'm in college now, and I'm excited about that, but I've tried all these little jobs trying to take care of us and keep a place. And my wife and I had a fight one day, a big argument, and I just stormed out of the house, got in the car. I'm driving around, don't know where I'm going. And I drive past this building, which has a marquee, and I don't know, but there are people lined up around the block, which is kind of interesting. So I kind of parked and asked what's going on. And they said there was a play I never been to a play, and so I didn't want to go home, so I got in line. Went into the theater, you know, and I don't know what to expect, but suddenly the lights go down, the play starts, and it's about a father and a daughter, and she's disobedient, and he's a pastor. She gets pregnant, he disowns her and kicks her out, and she, so she has an awful life, but then in the end, they come back together. And when the play was over, the lights went up, and I was in tears, and I thought, oh my God, it's just, oh, you know, I mean, and the actors were bigger than life. I mean, like, God, to be an actor, I mean, these people were, it was so, I couldn't even ask that prayer. I mean, how do you be that? I mean, you know, so that following semester, I needed an elective, and I saw they had an acting class. And so my wife suggested I take the class. And from the day I walked in the theater, I walked on stage, and I just knew I was home. You know, I knew that this is, I've been so bad at every job that I had. You know, I just thought every job I ever had, they're going to fire me as soon as they realize I have no, yeah. I hate this job. So I wanted a place. And when I found theater, I'm like, I can do this. You know, it was like one of those things where you kind of go, hold it. So, all right, let me get this straight. Now, I learned the lines and learned the story, and I do this, and then I get paid. I got this.
You're like, this has been around this whole time? I could have been doing this? Like,
who knew? I mean, are you kidding me? Shit, please. I don't have to shovel dirt. I mean, come on.
When's the part where we have to, like, grab a shovel? And they're like, oh, we don't do that.
So I just got immersed in theater. I started writing. It was a group in Detroit called Concept East Theater. It was at the time the oldest black theater sort of group in the country. I started a theater with some guys. Mm-hmm. We just was, you know, theater was it. And for almost 10 years, it was just doing a lot of plays. I mean, a lot of plays. I was always on stage. And that's how I just...
John, Tag, you're supposed to run after me after I touch you. You can't... That's not how tag works, the way you're playing.
It's a regional thing. I'm playing Midwestern rules.
Oh, I should have known that. Okay, my bad. Yeah. Sorry.
Hey, speaking of, Dave, you know, with Memorial Day coming up,
I'm guessing you're
probably getting ready for plenty of fun days in the sun.
Oh, my gosh.
Am I right?
First, I have to learn these rules for tag. But yes, everyone knows this, John. Everyone knows that time in the sun is best enjoyed with a pair of shades that you don't have to baby.
Oh, yeah.
Knockaround is the original affordable sunglasses company, and they've got just what you need for Memorial Day weekend, MDW, for those of us who celebrate all year, and all the way through summertime.
They do. And with over 20 different frame styles, there's something for the whole family, including tons for kids.
So, whether you're looking to rock a pair of red, white, and blue shades for the big weekend, or just to restock your collection before summer gets here, Knockaround has you covered.
Now, Dave.
Yeah.
Did you know that all their lenses have UV 400 protection, which is basically like sunscreen for your eyeballs?
Oh, man. And I've put copper tone just right on the old ojos, and it burns. It is not burning pretty. Still to this day.
Yeah, well, you keep putting it on.
Well, it's a habit. With polarized adult pairs starting at $28, you can get a few pairs to leave in your car, toss in your beach bag, or lend to a friend in need.
You know, Dave, where I come from, Memorial Day weekend means it's race day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
oh,
there's no more important place to have some shades than outside at the track.
Oh, yeah.
If you've heard me say that once, you've heard me say that a million times.
It's on your front yard.
I think I might actually just buy a pair of knockarounds in that color.
Yeah.
Like in the color of each car, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's switching back and forth based on who's leading the race.
Love that. That's one of the best ideas you've ever had.
So listen, Dadville fans, take that idea and run with it. Also, don't be the one squinting through family beach days or trips to the park. Go to knockaround.com and use the promo code DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order.
That's DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order at knockaround.com.
I just said that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I didn't know you could stretch that far. That's amazing.
I can't. That's actually a friend of mine.
Wow. Do you, speaking of your friends, do you ever bring your kids to the grocery store?
Oh, Dave, that's like the rookiest of rookie mistakes. Oh. No. In fact, you shouldn't even bring yourself to the grocery store.
Whoa.
It's Thrive Market all the way, Dave.
That was a trick question, and that is also the right answer, John. Thrive Market is our go-to for all our grocery and household essentials, and the convenience of ordering everything on their website or app and getting everything delivered to your doorstep quickly is a huge stress reliever.
Huge stress reliever. And the products are amazing. Mm-hmm. Plus, you can curate your own shopping experience with a few clicks and trust that you're getting high-quality products so that you can shop worry-free.
Yes.
I don't like to shop worried. You know what I mean?
Worry shopping is the worst.
You just place an order for some gluten-free items, like using the gluten-free filter.
Ooh.
Boom, it just gives you all the gluten-free stuff.
Wow.
I got FitJoy grain-free pretzels.
Yeah.
PIP corn white cheddar cheese balls.
Guys, for those of us in the loop, it's called pip corn.
No, I call it PIP. It's, a Midwestern regional thing.
Totally.
And I got some Lotus ramen noodles.
You are off. You're just off.
I'm off to the races,
you are
Dave.
Crazy, John. Not only do I save time shopping as a Thrive Market member, I also save money on every single grocery order. Over 30% each time on average.
That's crazy.
They even have a price match guarantee and a deals page that changes weekly.
That's right, Dave. In fact, on my last order, not to be, you know, competitive about it, but my last order of gluten-free items, the cost was $46. I saved $11.
I saved 10 last time. Plus, when you join Thrive Market, you can enjoy it and join it, John. I was trying to make both those
words.
It's
not an either or.
It's choose your own adventure, okay? And when you join and enjoy Thrive Market, you're also helping a family in need with their one-for-one membership matching program. You join, they give.
Save time and money and shop Thrive Market today. Go to thrivemarket.com/dadville for 30% off your first order plus free $60 gift.
That's thrivemarket.com/dadville. thrivemarket.com/dadville. And join today.
Yeah, when you started like that, did you have someone in that space, in the theater space, see you and go, hey, there's something here. Like, you should really keep trying.
Yeah, it was two guys. One, his name was Earl D.A. Smith. Brilliant man. Had come to Wayne State. He was amazing. And he had he was an instructor there. And he just saw, something in me. He was very, all the things he cast, I was always kind of the lead. I now realize that for all the guy parts, I was probably the strongest looking male. You know what I mean? It's like, a lot of the guys were kind of dancers and not, you know what I mean? But right. One of the first plays we did called How the Snake Got Its Rattles, and it was about a snake who's getting trampled on. And so he goes up to heaven to see God and say, God, you got to help me out here. These people are. So God gives him poison. And then he comes down and he starts just biting everybody and just killing everybody. So finally, God gives him a rattle so that people be aware when he's around. So I played God play.
Yeah. Of course.
And it was well received. But and there was another guy named David Regal, who we started the Actors Ensemble with, but David also cast me in a lot of stuff. And then I met a guy there who was doing a lot of community theater, a guy named Cliff Rockmore, and we just, was working a lot. I got my Actors Equity card during that time in Detroit, and that was before Yale and all that, but and once I was, I'm an actor. I think I saw myself more. I wanted to be more of a writer than an actor, but writing is, and even now, it was work. I took it serious, but it was really, I had to sit down and focus. And acting is a part of the business that I kind of go, you know what, I can be 3 years old forever, run around with the backpacks and shoot the ghost and do the silly stuff and you know, be in the scene where she hurts my feelings and I have to cry and then I have to, you know, all that stuff is just play. And I enjoy it. I mean, it's serious play in a lot of ways, but I don't, it's just a part of me that I don't have to think so much about. I study it, but I don't, you know what I mean? It's just a different kind.
Okay, so speaking of your acting career, which it's, I want to get back to what we said earlier, how, you know, we read your brag sheet and you talk about, you know, you're like, well, there's a, you know, there could be more awards behind me, all that kind of stuff. Dave and I talk about this all the time, how like there's always a way to frame your situation in, you know, glass half full or glass half empty, whatever it is. I mean, like, you have literally forgotten about more movies than most successful actors even get to be in. You know, it's insane. And you get to be in one of the most iconic. I mean, I was born in 82. For anyone born around the age where I am, it's like Ghostbusters is like one of the most iconic movies of all time. Which we have some stats here. It earned $282 million during its initial theatrical run, making it the second highest grossing film of 84 in the U.S. and Canada, and then the highest grossing comedy ever. It was the number one film in theaters for 7 consecutive weeks and one of only 4 films to gross more than $100 million that year, which this is back in 1984. I mean, $100 million. And then further theatrical releases have increased the total gross to $295.2 million, making it one of the most successful comedy films of the 80s. And in 2015, the Library of Congress selected it for preservation in the National Film Registry. So here's my question. And I feel like, you know, Dave and I are in the, we do this podcast, but we're both musicians. And so anytime that an artist has like a huge hit song, you know, it's like that's lightning in a bottle. That's a dream. Again, like you can have a whole successful career and never have a hit song. But when you have a hit song, oftentimes that artist has a complicated relationship with that song. You know, you can see it from the outside looking in and be like, well, thank God for that song. You must be so grateful. And, you know, and maybe you are, but you often... Sometimes you step on stage and you know everybody wants to hear that one song, and sometimes you can be resentful, like, hey, I've got other stuff. You know, I wrote that song back in whatever. So I'm curious, what has your relationship with those movies been like for you, having had such a successful career, literally 250 other movies that you've done? You know, what's your relationship like with it now?
Okay, that really gets kind of tricky because, and I love the way you framed that. You know, when we talked about getting started, and so I was so looking for, to me as an actor, to be, first off, to be in movies when I was on stage, that was kind of a dream, but to be in a movie that was number one at the box office, because then life changes. When you're number one at the box office, it's like, in my mind, these are the things that I believe. All I need is to get in a major movie, and it's number one, and it's a new ballgame. Yeah. And so I do this movie. First, I did a movie called Space Hunter with Ivan Reitman. Harold Ramis was one of the writers on it. That was a year before Ghostbusters. They kind of didn't see me for Ghostbusters because the character was really different. I mean, very different. And they didn't think it was right for Ghostbusters. So it took me a while to get the part. And then after we got the part, there were some changes. I don't want to go into all that. But the movie came out. I felt like, okay, I'm one of the Ghostbusters. But the studios, and I'll say the studio because the guys are great. Ivan is great. I have to really choose my words here because I don't want anybody to feel like I'm... But the studio, I felt, was deliberate... not to include me. So I wasn't on the poster. I felt like if I had been presented as one of the Ghostbusters, that would have been a career changer. But as a result, it went the other way, where I'd been working, you know, doing film and work, suddenly there was no work. It took 3 years, I think, after Ghostbusters before I got another film. Which is just totally the opposite of anything that I could have even imagined. I'm like, people were kind of, I couldn't get into it. With Columbia, who, it was their biggest movie, that kind of in a lot of ways saved the studio. And they would invite me to go to some of their shareholders' parties because I'm in this big movie. I couldn't get an audition with Columbia. I mean, really, it was just, it was nuts.
Why do you think that is?
You know, I think sometimes the studios want to focus on certain actors. In other words, these are the people we want to focus on, and you will call attention. Now, in fairness to Sony, I know, and I've been, and they basically said to me, we're not the same studio. And that's why you see in the new movie, the Winston character has evolved. Now Winston is, you know, he's in a different place. I feel that's the same, you know. But, and I'm included in the PR, even though, you know, but so now I'm a part of, and I think maybe in some ways you get the benefit. But back in 84, like I said, it was weird. And now you got to remember, I'm a single dad. I still got to pay the rent. Now, I've said this before, and people always take things a little out of context. I'm not saying I feel I should have gotten the same money that Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd got. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, people ask me my personal thing. Yeah. I'm saying, as a single dad trying to keep things going, it was a challenge. They did the cartoon, and I assumed that I would play my part, because I've done other voiceover stuff. I mean, it wasn't like I didn't know that. But they cast Arsenio Hall to be Winston Zeddemore. And so they said, well, you guys wouldn't do it. Well, maybe Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, but I could use some money. I'm like, but you know, okay, now having said all that, like I said, the studio is, I'm not angry at anybody, and I will say, as growth, because sometimes we forget, if you really believe in the universal guidance, the lessons I learned, the growth that it took for me to make peace with that, to explain that to my kids, to get up the next morning and kind of go back out here to, and also one of the weirdest things during that time was the movie was so popular that if you, in the neighborhood I lived in, which was in sort of the Pico Robertson area, if people know L.A., if you went to the store or the gas station, they were so excited about me being in the neighborhood and being in the movie, they would say, have you seen that movie Ghostbuster? Yeah, Ernie Hudson, he lives right at 1476. You know, and people would show up at my door. And suddenly now I have no privacy, but I haven't made any money in the movie because I can't move. And, it was an interesting time, but you kind of go, okay, there, you know, I've studied very hard. I got into business because I felt like it's a business that I can do for the rest of my life. So what else can I do? And for the first time I did some commercials. I never did commercial. I did some print work. And I started doing TV because I really wasn't that interested in doing television. But those were the days when I did The Little House on the Prairie and a lot of those TV shows. I think it was 1 year I did, I think, different television series episode guest starred about every week. I mean, like I had my own
series. Wow.
Every week I was going from one show to the next.
Which I got to imagine, I mean, keep in mind I know nothing, but I'm like, that's got to be a tough gig, because you're coming into like an established cast. They all know each other, and you're popping in for this one thing that you gotta do great. You don't have time to like develop a character. You gotta like get in there and kill it. You know.
Yes, but TV is very fast. Which is, I did Fantasy Island with Ricardo Montt.
Oh yeah.
And Fantasy Island was one of those shows where they had a bunch of big star guest stars. Mm-hmm. So I got this part, I get to the set, and I'm a little, you know what I mean? Because this is, I think, Howard Duff and I was just a bunch of people that I'd grown up watching on TV. I mean, these are older guys, but they've been around forever. And so I kind of, you know, and I was playing this voodoo. I had to dance with a snake. It was a whole weird episode. And my head was shaved. And so I kind of, you know, at lunchtime, I went to my dressing room and just shut the door and kind of, because I don't want to bother those people. I'm a little bit kind of. And then I get a knock on the door, and it's Ricardo Montalban. And he's there. He says, welcome. And literally, like, you know, he says, welcome. He says, come. Mm-hmm. And he says, we're so happy to have you on the show. And thank you for being, you know, I really appreciate you. And he took me over and he introduced me to all these stars who were sitting around having lunch. And he pulled up a chair and said, sit. And he went in and got my lunch. And he just made me feel so welcome that week that I was on that show. And it was just so... I was, you know, because when people are nice to you, when you feel like they don't have to be nice.
Right.
I sent him, he's the only actor I've ever sent a thank you note to. And I thought, if I ever get a chance to have a show, I want to be like that. You know, because he was just, I saw him a little before he made transition. And he came over, he said hello. And he was nice enough to actually make me believe he remembered that episode. I'm not sure, but he says, of course, how are you? And he hugged me, and I was just such a gracious man. But it's moments like that mm-hmm. sort of keep you going, yeah, no, this is, because there are other moments when you're kind of heartbroken and you don't know for sure. There are times when I've just broken down in tears because it just looked like nothing was happening. Mm-hmm. But it's moments like that and people like that. Every once in a while, someone will come along and just, it's almost like God sent to remind you that, you're right where you need to be.
Well, so, I mean, sort of exactly to your point, this is, I'm sure you've been asked this a good bit, especially doing the press you have around the new Ghostbusters movie, but what was it like going back and doing that character twice now with these two new movies? Especially to your point, because I would think there's got to be a part of that that's like, oh man, like I'm back, you know, like this thing that was a little tricky for me in the past. Now they see me, I'm back. I'm with these guys who I've done these movies with, and you know, I'm recasting this acting, you know, as this character that so many people know you as. What is that like? What was that like doing these two new movies?
You know, it's great. First off, I'm thankful that I didn't get caught up in my emotions and walk away from that. I have a lot of friends who came out to LA and they walk away angry and give up. And so I just kept working sort of in spite of, but you got to realize we did the first two movies. The second was 5 years after the first. And then it was a long period where it looked like there would never be, it was a lot of talk. You know, it's going to be another, you know, always talk, but it didn't look like it would ever happen. And I had sort of resolved to the fact that that was it. But the fans just kept coming and reminding and telling me stories. And so when we finally got to, and we did the female version, that was a lot of fun. But we didn't come back as Ghostbusters. We were sort of other characters. But I still felt like this will never happen. First, they'll never get Bill and Danny and everybody to sort of, you know, get together. And then suddenly it happened in Afterlife. And that film, when I walked on the set in my jumpsuit and I saw Bill and I saw Danny, and it was a tribute to Harold, it was really emotional. Yeah. You know, it's like, wow, you know, all these years and here we are. And it was just really, it was very, very, Annie Potts was there and Sigourney Weaver was there for a moment. She was, you know, and... Yeah, it was very, very, very emotional. Now, this new one, because, you know, it's been a couple of years, but I've been in contact with everybody. I had a chance to focus on the new cast, who I love. Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon. Paul is, first off, just the sweetest guy. I mean, he's just, I'm so, I got a chance to sort of step back and see, I love the way actors sort of, you know, kind of their process, how they get in, you know, how they, what they come with, how they show up. But I love these guys, McKenna Grace, and it's just a great group of young people. And it's really kind of cool. And see Bill and Danny and all that. Mm-hmm. So I'm very, very thankful. I don't really, you know, I kind of, every time we do one, I kind of go, okay, well, that's it. Maybe this is the end, and it's fine. But I'm glad I got it. It was almost like a full circle, because all those things that I didn't want to happen in the original movie, the studio was kind enough to say, okay, we acknowledge you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That meant a lot to me.
Are you one of those where, you know, again, Dave and I talk about our careers so much, like every time we put a tour on sale or every time we write a song, there's a part of me that's like, well, this is going to be the last tour I ever do. Like, no, surely no one's going to come out again. Or like you finish a song and you're like, yeah, I don't know how to write songs. In between the writing, you're just like, I don't know how people write songs. That's the last song. Have you, I mean, from the outside looking in, you're like, surely a guy who's done this much in his career doesn't feel that way. But I feel like oftentimes we're proven wrong when we ask, you know, musicians and actors and all that. Do you feel like, all right, well, that's the last movie. Surely it's got to be over now.
Well, you know, in 2011, I went through a bout with cancer, and there was some missteps by the doctor, and I almost died.
Oh, my gosh.
To the point where I knew I was, my body was shutting down, and I knew that I was, it was probably the end.
Yeah.
Now, wow. I'm being rushed through the hallways of the hospital to emergency surgery, and there's a part of me that just goes, you know, this is, maybe this is it. And I got one or two choices. I can start to beg, you know, oh God, please, no, not now. Or you just accept that this is, maybe this is it. And
wow.
And I have to be okay with that. So yeah. Whatever I haven't done, maybe, you know, I'm thankful for what I've done. You know, yeah. All the things I haven't gotten, maybe that's not meant to happen. And I remember I had got my wife's cell phone while they were running me through the hallways. And I called my sons and I said, I love you. And I just want you to know that I had accepted that. Mm. And I think that I feel that way with my careers. Like if I never do another film and TV show, if I never get a chance to act again, I'm good. Thankfully, I'm in a decent financial place where I don't have to worry. But there's another part of me that says, yeah, but you know, I've never done, you know, I've never done a rom-com, you know, right. I mean, I never, you know, I want to do the things I wanted that I came in the business wanting to do. And that's still a part of me. I want that role that defines. It was like when Jamie Foxx got Ray. Jamie Foxx is a wonderful actor, but sometimes a role just, you know, it's just role that you can.
Yeah.
All of, I did it on stage with a play called The Great White Hope. And everything I ever learned, I had to call on to get through this show. I mean, it exhausted me. And every night out, I learned something. I haven't had that in TV. I've been in other people's stuff, and I'm happy to be working.
Yeah.
But now it's at a point where, and people will call me and say, we want you in our movie. We only need you for one day. We don't really. And I'm like, I don't want to be just in a movie. I don't need another credit. You know, I want to be the guy, you know. I want to dig deep. I want to show up. And so that's a little bit of, what's happening.
Well, let me just say, first of all, thanks for being on. We so appreciate your time. And you taking time from your gym routine means so much to us.
I'm just feeling for all the people out there who are so frustrated at your answer, like where you're like, no. They were expecting like, here, do these five things every day and you can have these biceps. And they're like, well, that's not helpful. Yeah. You're just God given. Like, come on.
Just work in a mold factory.
You know, my grandmother's, keep bringing her up, I guess, this morning. But, you know, her thing with me is, don't worry about, you know, I never saw myself as being really, I've never seen myself as being not being smart, and I'm certainly consider myself intelligent, but I don't brag about being the smartest guy in the room. I'm not that guy. I'm not going to go on Jeopardy and win. You know what I'm saying? By the time I get the answer, the show will be over. So I get that. I accept that. But I'm right smart enough for what I need. You know what I mean? I'm good. So her thing was, don't worry about being doing something brilliant, if you have a magical moment and something happens, that's wonderful. But don't rely on that. Just don't be stupid. Stupid will get you killed.
Yeah.
You can't live your life as if there's no tomorrow, because you might have a tomorrow and you're going to have to live with that drunken binge you went on 30 years ago. Now your liver's not working right. So, and especially with kids. So I'm always aware of every day just trying to do something a little bit better. I'm not perfect with the eating thing, but I know who the enemies are. I know sugar's not my friend. You know, I'm not going to not eat a bit of the birthday cake, but to eat the whole damn cake is not smart.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I think it's a little bit of, I see people do stuff and I go, you know, you're going to have to live with that.
Yeah.
You know, and so that to me is, I know I got to, if I want to, you know, appear healthy, you know, I got to either get to the gym or get up in the morning and do some push-ups. I mean, mm-hmm. I got to touch my toes. I'm 78 years old. If I can't touch my toes.
That's just a great quote.
I know that's
just a good quote.
So that's my answer.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so we end these with a speed round. So buckle up, because we've got some speed round questions for you, and then we'll release you back to Los Angeles. Okay, so I'll ask the first one. If you could have the world watch one of your movies or TV shows, you can just pick one. What would it be?
The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Oh, that's great.
I like that movie. I like that character.
Yeah. All right, second question. If you're going to sit down at the couch, like end of the day, you're going to sit at the couch, turn the TV on and watch something, what's your go-to?
I love It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, wow.
It, you know, just kind of just for the feel good. I'm not a big fan of horror and things and movies where people do bad things, because it makes me feel bad.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, don't do that, and then they do it, and then it's like, you know, so those kind of nice, you know, family. Uplifting. If I had my way, I'd do all these wonderful, nice, probably dad things.
Mm-hmm.
But every once in a while, like I do a series called The Family Business, and the guy can be a little ruthless, you know. But and I, as an actor, it's fun to sort of dig into the psychosis of what makes these people do those things.
Yeah.
But in truth, I kind of look for, you know, films that are, you can laugh a little bit and feel good about yourself.
If you could have a meal with three people, this is always such a cheat question, but if you could have a meal with three people, dead or alive, who are the people? And then also, what is the meal?
Oh, geez. Okay. Well, three people. Muhammad Ali, I would have liked to have sat down with.
Yeah. Yep.
Martin Luther King might have been interesting to have a meal with. Maybe it's problematic, but I want John Kennedy keeps coming to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Was sort of inspired by him in a lot of ways. And the meal would be, probably just a really nice salad.
Nice,
you know what
salad.
I mean? I don't want anybody to pig out. You get so where they can't think. You know what I mean? I don't want to spend the whole meal. Everybody's wolfing down food. And then I have time.
We're falling asleep immediately.
You know, so just nobody's that much into food. It's like, why are we here? And I'm like, okay, let's talk, you know?
Yeah, let's talk.
But if it's something they overenjoy, it's like, what? No.
That's smart.
That's
I like
great.
It. All right, last question. Let's say you wrote, directed a movie on being a dad. This is a movie on fatherhood. What would the title be?
On being a dad? I don't know. Something about belonging.
Hmm.
Belonging. You know. Who you belong to. It's important to belong. To know you belong somewhere.
Yeah, I love that. Something about belonging is great.
Belonging,
title for the movie, actually.
That's what family is about, you know, not being, you know, some people cut off their families and just go it alone. And I've never felt that I didn't belong. I've never in my life felt unloved, ever. I've always known, with my grandmother and my wife, we've been together almost 50 years, but I've always believed that I was loved.
Yeah.
Mm. That's a gift.
Yeah.
Well, brother, we appreciate your time. And congrats on the new movie.
Oh,
congrats
thanks.
On it.
Well, I appreciate you guys. Awesome and I'm going to look forward to the stuff that you guys do and try to support you in any way that I can. But I just appreciate you taking the time and inviting me. Sorry for being late.
Yeah, of course.
Well, we're
course,
honored.
Of course.
We're honored.
Thank you, man. Have a great rest of the
day. All right, guys. You too. Take care.